We need a soft revolution, and that's why we're here. This is Soft Revolution, the podcast. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us after a week off. My name is Torquil Campbell.
I'm Ali Moman.
And today on the pod, we've just finished. I feel exhilarated. Do you feel exhilarated?
Yeah.
We just talked to, like, truly, you guys, one of the great talkers, thinkers, people in the whole game. His name is Shad. He is a rapper. He's a broadcaster. He's a writer. And
a father.
And a father, of course. I've known him for, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years now. We don't see each other much. We run into each other backstage and stuff. And every single time I see that guy, I'm just like, this guy is such a beautiful human being. Mm-hmm. He's so brilliant. And he's so honest. His work is so honest. It's so filled with, he is a perfect mixture of elegance and honesty. You know, like, it's what he says is raw, but it also feels beautiful. And just one of the most gifted rappers. Like, his flow, if you're a rap fan out there, I put Shad up there with the top people in terms of his ability to tell stories and his actual physical flow. He's a master, he's a virtuoso, and he's just incredible. So we've just finished talking to him for a long time. You guys are gonna get to hear that conversation. We were gonna do it in Trinity Bellwoods Park.
But it rained.
It rained. Doug Ford arranged for it.
But
to
I
rain.
Think this worked out lovely.
It was great.
Because first of all, this is the first time Torque and I are in person.
Yes, we should say that.
Yeah,
actually,
this is the first time in person.
We're sitting here,
podcast.
You guys, yeah. 2 feet apart
two
from
feet
each
apart.
Other. Double vaccinated.
Double vaxxed.
Giving
following
you a podcast.
The Teresa Tam rules.
It's incredible, yeah. man. It's absolutely yeah. incredible.
And last night I had the privilege of going to see, you know, Torque on stage doing a concert. First of all, that was amazing.
Thank you, brother.
Man, that was amazing.
Thank
it was my
you.
First Stars show.
Thanks.
And
really?
It, my first.
Oh my God.
I know.
It's crazy.
It was awesome.
I thought you'd come to see me before.
No, it was amazing. So
Thank
that
you.
Was great.
Thank you.
And it feels like we're kind of slowly moving back. And that's the conversation we're having with Shad and how we come back. And
yeah.
A, why it's important.
Yeah.
And B, why we need to stand up.
Well,
for
yeah,
that return.
I've played shows last week. This week, I've played my first two shows. I played the Calgary Stampede in front of people standing in a field. And I played yesterday, the show you saw, it was a drive-in, but people were out of their cars. And it's happening, dude. I don't know. You know, we talk a lot to Shad about what the future holds. I think we're just all living on tenterhooks in a way. But we do all, as we've said time and time again, we got to go back. We got to be together. And Shad talks a lot about that in our chat with him. So we're not going to take a long time today. We're just going to get to this chat because it's so awesome and we want you to hear it. We just wanted to celebrate this moment after 60-some episodes of this thing. You know, we found...
You've been my pandemic.
You've been my pandemic, man.
You and complete me...
You complete me pandemically.
Pandemically.
Sorry, Kimmy, it's a little difficult. Allie's partner's here. I don't mean to step on your shit. But I would like to claim a little piece of the guy for myself, if that's all right. Yeah, no, it's just really awesome
yeah,
to
man.
Be in your presence, and thank you for hanging in there with me and all of you. Thank
I'm also
you
very
for
proud of everything you do, everything you've done.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm going to tell you this to your face.
Thanks, buddy.
That I'm just like in awe of you, inspired by you, and like just your kind of like just vigor, constant curiosity. You are
the feeling
you are
is
an inspiration.
Completely mutual.
Yeah,
you
sorry,
are an inspiration
just,
to me. You are a total inspiration to me. And this podcast has been a way of expressing friendship and talking to our community. And it's on we go because we have our wonderful supporters at Crow's Theater. We're here in
yes.
Crow's Theater, in the theater that has not opened since last March, but they are planning a season. There's going to be bodies in here. There's going to be actors in here. And it's feeling good, folks. I know it's scary, but we gotta be brave. So let's get to Shad right now. Celebration time, Soft Revolution. Okay, buddy, we're gonna now have the same conversation you and I have been having while Ali tried to fix all this shit. Thank you so much. This is our show that we've been doing together since the pandemic started, like right when it began. Ali and I started this. Ali called me and was like, let's do this thing. And we just started talking every week on the internet to each other. So it turned into like a plague diary, basically. But we've tried to talk about the experience of going through it yeah. as an artist
yeah.
and the uncertainty and the fears and the roller coaster of reading the New York Times article that says we'll never be together again. And oh, yes, maybe we will. So let's start with that. Like,
awesome.
We're a year and a half in. We were just talking about how you feel like that's the threshold for people's mentality to deal with this before they start to feel like they have to transition. In that year and a half, do you feel like you have questioned ever being an artist?
I'll say the bright side first.
Always.
It's a reverse with you. You start with dread and go to bright.
Yeah, but that's
but
why
Chad
I hang.
Is good.
That's
he starts with hope.
That's
I
why
like
we
it.
Like each
I
other.
I like it.
Yeah. I'll start with hope first. The cool thing that happened in terms of just sort of feeling like an artist was I noticed every week it felt like I would just find myself making something. Mm-hmm. And then trying to find a way to share it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like you didn't doubt. You kept pretty steady with it.
Well, this is the positive part, okay? Like, so the positive part is I felt like it put me in touch with, so I'll give you an example. Like, early on, I was missing basketball to cancel the NBA.
Yeah.
Mm. I was missing basketball. So I'd go on YouTube and I'd watch these old games.
Really?
And then I was like, you know what? Like, some of this stuff is like really interesting and funny. So I'd like take my phone up to the laptop screen and like capture these little clips, and I cut the little clips, and I ended up doing these long Instagram stories that would take me like a full day to make, that were like recaps of this game, of these games, with like pop-up video type information.
Oh my God.
And they took me like an entire day to make.
People don't get how much work
okay.
it is to
it's
do that.
So
kind of
it
stuff.
Was I was like, yeah. Why am I spending so much yeah. time doing this? Or then I was watching the Michael Jordan documentary and
yeah,
there was
Last
this
Dance.
Last Dance.
Yeah.
And there was this scene where they're talking about the last time the team was together, mm-hmm. and the coach had this ceremony where everybody like wrote something and they burned it in a fire. And the one guy casually mentioned that Michael Jordan wrote a poem and then burned it in the fire, and I'm just like, Michael Jordan wrote a poem.
Yeah.
So then I wrote like 15 poems from the voice of Michael Jordan.
Oh, nice.
So, okay, all of this to say, like, I felt like I got in touch with something very fundamental, which was cool. Like, just to sort of recognize, like, this is really who I am.
Yes.
It's not just my job. If you leave that, sorry, this is a really long story to just to get to that point, but, like, I just got in touch with, like, this is really who I am.
It was, for me, the same, like, a way of, like, trying to reclaim my identity, like remind myself that I existed in some way, that I wasn't disappearing. It's like, no, I make this.
Yes.
Even if it means nothing, I make this. This is what I do.
Do you think that when it all goes away and you're back to where we were when we first started as artists, when all we had was, we didn't have an industry, a job, a manager, an agent, all of that gets stripped away. And all we have is that thing in us, is that when we're in our lonesome, do we say to ourselves, yes, we must do this?
Like, you just want to do it. Like, I don't know, that to me was positive.
It was, so yeah. That was the positive
that
part.
Was the
so
positive.
What was the negative? I'm assuming there is one.
Yeah, there was definitely negative. I mean, so yeah, the positive was I do feel like I got in touch with who I am on the super fundamental level. Like, it's not even just music. It's just, I'm a person that, if you leave me alone for a while, I will try to make something mm-hmm. that will, and I'll try to share it as a way of just connecting and bringing people together and entertaining them. The downside, I mean, our industry, along with the rest of the world, was a mess before this.
Yeah.
And this just highlighted
yeah.
how much of a disaster.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we're in. Stephen Marsh, who was on this
yeah.
podcast, remember he wrote something early on about the pandemic saying exactly that. Like, this isn't something new as much as it's just like the culmination of where we've been heading in terms of the isolation and in terms of the precariousness.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the downside. The downside is very clear and very obvious. Like, our industry, for like the reality for artists in terms of money and in terms of just culture and community was getting worse, and the pandemic just shut it all down.
Yeah.
So we didn't have what felt to me like the thing that makes it all make sense, which is the live experience. Mm-hmm. Like, everything else has become a Wild West, but there was the live experience that made it all make sense
yeah.
to me. That's how I felt
totally
in the 3 years, say, prior to the pandemic.
100%.
Like, okay, the live experience makes it all make sense. I can look people in the eye and I can tell what this music means to them, if it means anything, you know? Now you can't tell. You know, you can see numbers, but you can't see what it means to somebody. And you can't have that experience that gives you back something that then you can bring back to creating. So that's the downside. And the real downside is that I don't think we spent the pandemic figuring all that out. That's the sad part.
Well, you know, Torque and I talk a lot about how, you know, people say all the time, you know, even our prime minister came out and said, it's like artists have gotten us through this, everything that you've done. But you would think that that type of statement would equate that after we're done this pandemic, that people are going to value art more. Yes or no? Do you think that's going to happen?
No.
Why?
So now I'm going to go on maybe an epic Torque style rant.
This is why we're here.
Shall I leave the room for a while? Just let you do it.
No, we won't, because there's no imagination and there's no. I think one of the problems fundamentally is there's no other value system in our culture. There's only economic efficiency. Yep. There's no other value system. Yep. You're not allowed to talk about anything else. Yep. You're not allowed to argue from any other basis.
Even with art, you have to use money.
Even with art, you have to use money.
That's the why it's important.
We have zero imagination. Mm. We have zero... we have no other value system, and so we have no other way of talking about anything. So I think comments like that, respectfully, are lip service, because we don't have it, and we need it desperately.
And we don't put it into our... We don't demonstrate that care. That's the thing about Trudeau or any of these people. I mean, I've been, like, screaming literally sometimes on this podcast to the point where people are like, could you please tell Torque to shut the fuck up? But like,
I do an edit on Logic. I bring the volume down. It's fantastic.
But like, why, first of all, they never say the word art, but when they do, they say art is so important. But where's the demonstrable policy? Where are you placing it in schools? Why are there fewer brass instruments? Why are there fewer choirs? Why are there fewer arts programs? Why is it so difficult for kids to access art? Why is it so expensive to go see shows? All these things, as you say, it's like, so if you don't think that will happen, where does that leave us, in your opinion? Like, say just you and me, mid-career artists who, you know, have followings, but are never going to get rich off this game. Do you think that we are in a significantly worse place than we were a year ago? Or is there an opportunity to write the story in a different way? And if we can do that, how would it work?
I can't help but feel a kind of excitement, for lack of a better term. Like, because I think situations like this is like, we're called to respond. All of us are called to respond. Like, to me, the problem is very clear, and it like affects the arts, but affects everything else too. Mm-hmm. Housing, you name it. Yeah. There's just no imagination. There's no value system, right? Beyond what makes dollars and makes sense. Yeah. And so we all have to respond. And I feel like as artists, I guess I feel excited because I feel like we can lead in that. Hopefully, if we have some courage, you know, we can lead with like conversations like this, but also with just like the stuff that we make and the space that we create once we can get back together.
Redefining the word worth, redefining the word value.
Yes.
That isn't quantitative, but qualitative. Yeah. We speak in such quantitative ways, and now it's to be like, but we are the masters of the qualitative.
It's funny, you know, coming here, I grew up in this town, and I hardly ever come here anymore, and coming here this time after the pandemic.
Yeah, I heard you were shitting on our city.
Dude,
come
this
on.
This place, sorry y'all, but this place looks like shit. And it is, I look around and I see the patches of my memory, the buildings, the new things, and I'm looking at a city with no plan, with just reaction, with just feeding the market,
feeding the market,
letting beautiful little things about this city, like our little parks and the little lanes, the cul-de-sacs, they look like shit, man. There's garbage every, what the fuck? What's happening? Yeah. And what's happening is that everything, as you say, the priority 100% of the time is how can we maximize profit here, maximize efficiency, fuck history, fuck the community, just let's put it up and worry about it later. Yeah. And I think there has to be like an end to that.
Yeah, yeah.
At like, some point, so, people will say, no, I can't do this anymore. I just can't live in this place anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that it starts with feeding our souls.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really think it starts with feeding our souls.
Do you
because
think the internet? Like, are you like me? Do you think the internet is the problem?
I think that the problem is that the internet didn't come with a new value system.
If you look at the way things engagement works,
yeah.
It's based on nothing more than profitability.
Exactly.
And enragement is engagement. Exactly. So it's actually when that model shows up with the power of the internet, probably the greatest superpower that has ever happened, it's even amplified.
That's 100%.
It's worse.
That's 100%.
So to me, it's not exactly like, so if you think about movies like The Matrix and whatever the dream of the internet mm-hmm. was, mm-hmm. it was that it would be accompanied by a new value system.
Mm.
That it was about liberating people from that value system.
Mm.
And it just copied the same value system, but like you said, Ali, with power that we never imagined, mm-hmm. right? So that's what I think has happened. And I don't know how we recover that. I think it begins with feeding our souls, you know, and dare I say it, because you can't say it, a spiritual sense,
yeah.
You know, whether that be art, whether that be spiritual practice, whether that be an important conversation is happening now, which is being in touch with the land mm-hmm. and the languages and history that has actually come out of this land. That's spiritual. Mm-hmm. That's spiritual. We don't have that. Mm-hmm. I don't have yeah. that. I don't know if we at this table have that, right? That connection to this land, which is spiritual and which will change our imaginations mm-hmm. and make us no longer think about art from a standpoint of like, okay, well, what's the business case for it? Or like housing from a standpoint of like, whatever, interest rates and mortgage rates. Like, yeah. No. Housing is something people need. Art is something people need. You know what I mean? But I think that we don't get there unless we feed our soul.
There is something in like that, because I teach acting at George Brown. One of the things I said, as an artist, yeah. people say all the time, live in the moment. But as an artist, you have to bring the past, the present, and the future. You have to be cognizant of all those things. And that's why I think it is important. So how do we as artists, beyond just making art, how do we like throw ourselves into society in a way to start shaping society? Because it seems like our art is helpful, it's beneficial, but it's not enough.
Well, it's like I really love what you said that there about like past, present, and future, like living together. That's the sort of thing we have to bring to, like in the best case of scenarios, we bring that. We remind people mm-hmm. of that, right? We remind people that in our world. Somebody told me that the way that they defined art was art has to have a sense of history or else it's not art. Has to know where, self-consciously or not, has to know where it's coming from and where it's going. And I just feel like that sort of stuff with soul like that, that's having soul. That's the spiritual that I'm talking about. Mm. If we, like we can lead in terms of putting people in touch with that, with our performances on stage, with the music that we make, we put in touch people in touch with like, this is what it is to be a human being. It's to be in touch with history and imagining the future. In many indigenous cultures, there's this idea of that's how you make decisions. You don't make decisions like we make decisions in our culture, which is just short-term economic focused. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't make a decision unless you're honoring the past mm-hmm. and considering the future.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, man. When I hear you talk this way, I'm sure you get asked this.
Mm-hmm.
Ali has decided that, like, he's passionate about this shit. He's an artist. He's going to try and get into politics, right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to run for the Liberal Party in High Park, provincially. Do you think about that?
We're running for
No,
I can't. I can't because I don't understand it. I think that, like, you got to do things you understand intuitively.
What do you feel you don't understand?
Come talk to me after. I'll give you all the details. We'll get you in.
Every single thing.
Hmm. That interests me because I think of you as, you know, one of the great talkers I know, and someone who, as you've done today and you're doing, is like, you're not a Pollyanna. You're not just singing a happy song. It's you're willing to talk about the difficult shit. But that's the thing is, this is an ongoing conversation between me and my buddy, is like, is there room for the difficult conversation in politics? Or do you ultimately always become beholden to the party line, to whatever, you know, soundbite or social media buzz is happening and act in response to it? That seems to me to be the way political parties now behave. It's like whatever's happening on social media, you know, Jagmeet Singh's happy because he has a great TikTok account. It's like, buddy, that ain't it. You know, I'm glad you have a nice TikTok account, but we are trying to change a country here. So do you think that, like, as artists, we have to stay out of politics in a way? Like, how do you marry? Because I know you have strong views about the way society should be, and you're a person who believes in social justice, et cetera.
I do, but what I understand and where my mind gravitates all the time is exactly what I'm talking about right now, which is that really sort of fundamental spiritual level of things. And that's where my mind goes, uh-huh. right? And that's where my work goes. Whereas my mind doesn't go naturally to how can this get organized and get done?
Okay, so
I feel like the people with that gifting are the politicians. Right. It's the people whose mind goes to, I bet you if I could activate this community and mm-hmm. this group and that group, we could get this done. My brain doesn't go there. My brain goes, how can we, I don't know.
The truth is, I think from what I've noticed in politics, we have not enough of this type of thinking. We have the people that can think in a box and do what, you know, they live in their level of domain knowledge. You know, but it's important to remember that, listen, FDR is not perfect. Yeah. I always preface everything. I'm cognizant of everything. The FDR's inadequacies. Okay.
He cheated a lot on his wife.
Yeah. But his big premise was that his big idea of the New Deal was to create a society that was politically just and spiritually beautiful. Mm. That was his kind of ethos. There was a larger thing.
Vision.
We don't have that vision. Especially climate change. This is something that if we want to get to net zero emissions by 2050, it's not enough to just be like, this is what we're going to do. You have to galvanize, mobilize, you know, inspire people. So I think we do profoundly need more artists in politics. And then all the details, and you know how we are. When you first wanted to, talk to me, like when you first wanted to be you going to the music industry, like, wasn't it also like kind of just like on a lark as well too?
Yeah.
Wasn't for you, Torque? Wasn't there just a lot of like, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. I don't know the particulars.
Yeah.
Did you know the particulars of the music industry?
I signed a deal for 3 albums for $1,500 for the world. Oh shit. That's how much I knew. Yeah. And I just got the record back 22 years later.
Hey, you deserve it.
You know,
you deserve that.
I guess I had no expectations at all. And now I have all the expectations because I've come to expect things, I guess. And I've come to feel like I've earned things or I haven't earned things or whatever. But you're it's like when you're talking, my mind is like a train. I'm seeing all the stations go by and I'm trying to keep track of things I want to ask you about. Here's one thing I want to get your read on, because it's a strange place I think we're in, which is, you know, one kind of positive thing that came out of the terribleness of the George Floyd murder was there was this explosion of enough is enough around white supremacy and around the tools of oppression that work in society. Mm-hmm. And artists, of course, became very engaged in this conversation. And I'm freaking out a little because what I'm seeing is that now the institutions, the system is saying, oh, all these people want is for us to use their language.
Yeah.
We don't have to change. Yeah. We just have to use their language and ape it back at them. We have to put a rainbow flag outside the Royal Bank and we have to cast a black guy in a superhero movie. And we have to, you know, but the tools don't change and the functions of those tools don't change. As a rapper, what do you make of what's happening to language right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on something important, you know, like, it's all about the outcome in the end. It's like, so Bismarck, he just died, right?
I know.
57, right? And it's like, on one hand, it's like, yeah, our heroes are dying young. It's like, well, yeah, but also just black people die young. Yeah. That's the issue.
Yeah.
You know, the police murders, obviously horrible, but everything kills us.
Diabetes, poverty.
Everything kills, poverty, you know, everything kills us. Racism kills us. Yeah. Police just have guns. Yeah. Right, it's the tip of the proverbial iceberg. Right, it's the rest of it sunk the Titanic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm. It's why understanding the past is so important. You know, I think for me, my parents who came, you know, from Iran, whatever, learning about the residential schools and learning about the graves, for them, it started to increase their level of empathy. Yeah. Towards the plight of our indigenous people, yeah. And it gave them an understanding. So it's a very good point that you bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like we are at a very interesting point because we are understanding in so many ways on so many different fronts, this can't continue the way we've been going. We can't continue. Got to steer the ship. It seems to me hard in another direction.
But like, don't you see the progressive left in a way accepting this language change and being okay with that and then not going further? Because yeah, the money's not sexy, right? Yeah. The money's not sexy. The identity politics is sexy. The language is sexy. All that stuff. But the money, which is what you're ultimately saying, is like black people die young because of money. Yeah. Because racism is the little sister of capitalism, right? Yes. And so these things are working together.
Yes.
Or do you think rap music is so beholden to capitalism at this point that it's kind of impossible to get that message out through rap?
I think the message is there, but again, I just keep coming back to this fundamental level. That's where we need to steer. Like, we got to decide a direction. I think what you're getting at a little bit, Torque, is like, we can decide on language pretty easily, but we can't. We got to pick a course. Like, it's more than just deciding on language or deciding on certain symbols. It's like we have to decide to, we want to be a society that's more equal. Mm-hmm. Like, we got to decide that. We got to decide, again, like you were saying, to the qualitative. What are the qualitative things? We have to name them. We have to decide, because otherwise the forces are take certain forces, capitalism, racism, sexism, they're taking things in another direction. Mm. It's not like not deciding. We have this illusion almost that like not deciding just means we keep going. I don't know. Like,
but you're saying that that decision has to be made, but that it has to actually be a spiritual.
That's it. We got, our hearts have to change for us to be able to say, this is what we want.
Okay, so then let's plug your new album, because I don't know what it's about. I haven't heard it yet because it's not out yet. But I have also been thinking a lot about this. We're all caught up in these issues as artists. We're all writing about it. We're making, it's a very declamatory period in art. There's a lot of moral certainty going on. A lot of us saying, it's like, kind of like the 60s, you know, war is terrible and race, you know, let's stop being racist. And people are making art that is very declamatory. Is that what people are gonna wanna hear when they've been sitting on their asses depressed for a year and a half?
I don't know.
Or do they wanna hear something else? I mean, what do you feel, like, where do you see, you are not just a purveyor of rap, but a student of it. I know you follow it closely. What do you see happening in that way? Do you think that there's gonna be a kind of return to aesthetic beauty in rap? Because of people's desire to just like live the glamorous life again and get the fuck out to a club or whatever?
Yeah, I think to some extent that's always there in rap. It's always there in all of music, is like it's an escape, right? And that's important. That has to be there. And hip hop started as party music, getting people together, right? That's how it started. DJs. and just and but there was always
storytelling didn't really come, did it? Until the mid-80s,
until later. But the storytelling was always there in the beautiful way that people DJed, because hip hop DJing was all about playing everything, whatever was funky, whatever was dope, whatever made people dance. That was what was so. And the way that it was just cut together, but that was what was so.
That was the story. How Seals and Crofts and disco music and 808s could all blend together.
How it is all together, you know, and how we are all together, right? And DJs also, it's like they're the keepers of the history. Again, you know, they'll play that old record and they'll play this new record. You see how they're related? You see, you know, like that. We need some an injection of that.
Soft Revolution is brought to you by FN Birds, a book and webcomic by the great Aaron Reynolds. And as you know, it's not just a book, it's not just a webcomic. There are also playing cards. And every single week, I go into the deck of cards and I pull it out and I let you know what's up. So today, what do we got? We got the Nine of Hearts. The Nine of Hearts. And I think it's, I don't know my birds. It's a bird. It's like a tall, weird looking bird. And it says, I like you better when you shut the fuck up. Now, this applies to nobody on this podcast today. So, but in general, this does apply to some people and you know who they are. So thank you, FN Birds, for sponsoring Soft Revolution. Please go to FNBirds.com, EFFINBirds.com, get the book. Get the webcomic, and please buy these playing cards because we're going to be together again and you're going to want them. So thank you to FN Birds for sponsoring Soft Revolution.
Is your record like, is it a plague diary? I mean, did you write it during this or is it?
So the funny thing is like, I wrote it before and I came up with a concept before, but it's like just too on the nose now. Like I hate it. Like I have to play a show in a couple days and I'm like, I just can't play these songs. You know, I'm playing like out in Western Canada and like the last song I put out is called Storm and it has just these heavy like environmental overtones. It's like, I can't, man, I don't even, I feel like I'm jinxing every, like I can't, you know? So, but I always, when I came up with the concept for the album, it was like, I want to get a little bit away from this declarative thing and I want to get a little bit deeper, you know, and say, hey, yeah, our natural world, and I don't even like talking about our environment because it's just us. Like I need a new word that just means life.
A human problem.
Life, life is threatened and it's related to the rest of life. You know, this whole, the climate change issue is of course related to capitalism.
It's too small a word
and environment is too small.
It's too small a word.
So I'm trying to put that in this song, you know, called Storm. It's like we're not well. We're not well in every sense, including the natural world that gives us life, right? The natural environment that gives us life. I'll never forget an experience I had on the West Coast that changed my whole view on the environment, quote unquote. Again, I don't like that word. But it was a friend of mine, indigenous person, talking about a pipeline they wanted to build through her land. And she was talking in these terms. She's like, you got to understand, this land is me, and not in a metaphorical sense. 13,000 years of my people. Their bones, their dust is this bone.
I'm made of it.
I'm made of it. I'm made of it.
Yeah.
The salmon, I'm made of it.
Yeah.
It is me, you know? And me growing up as an immigrant in London, Ontario, I never had that connection to land. I never thought of land that way.
Yeah.
You know, land was like, I have a whole weird long story of land and it's just sort of where you end up and where opportunities are to survive. Never thought about it that way. That is what made me care, was thinking, damn, like, this is spiritual, this is real, this is like, this soil really is me. Like, what is this concept I had that I was something else apart from it? You know, maybe because I am fundamentally a displaced person.
Yeah.
I'm on some other rant now, but I guess what I'm getting at is like, I do feel like it relates to the music because I'm trying to get at that with the music. I'm trying to, again, like, just pull these threads together and hopefully through that pull people together.
With a funky beat.
Of course. Of course.
With a funk. It's crazy because...
With humor and joy and dancing and everything.
Joy and
great storytelling and good flow, my friend. Yeah. Great flow. You're one of the great flowers. But
I want to ask you, so it's something you brought up, though. Myself, immigrant, person of color, yourself, immigrant, person of color. Do you feel that that kind of allowed us to like be blind to other issues? Because we, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, can you talk about that?
So we all have... So on one hand, yes, but on another hand, like there's obviously things that are apparent to us that might not be apparent to other people. So like we're just a little ways past Canada Day, but you know, my family, I won't get into the long history of it, but like we've been displaced basically since my parents were kids, right? So, and you know, and they, my parents moved all around East Africa as refugees in all these countries that were like, they're not countries, like in the sense that they were borders
defined
drawn
by the British.
They were defined by the British. I'll tell you an amazing story on that. So Rwanda, if you look in the history books, it says Rwanda became a German colony in 1884. No Germans arrived in Rwanda until 1892. This is what the history books say. So literally it's still, in Europe, people wrote on a sheet of paper,
"This is ours."
This is ours. And the history books still recognize that moment as something important that happened. So then we fast forward, however.
Chris, this theater is mine.
Yeah. We're planning to go kill some people right here in 10 years.
So, and it's still in the history books to this day as if that was a significant moment. So fast forward, however many years, and we're having this conversation about Canada Day and what this nation state is. And like, I've always had an awareness that like nation states are like something, you know what I mean? Like whatever, like let's all get together and celebrate something, I guess. But like, I've always had an awareness of that. Now there's other things that I definitely didn't have an awareness of as an immigrant, as a person of color, right? And then also as a Canadian, we don't have that, we don't have the best lens on ourselves, right? So I remember I did an interview in Germany my first time on tour there, and somebody asked me about Canada and the kind of nation-to-nation relationship, treaty relationships that exist here. And I could see in their eyes, like, the way they thought about that situation for the first time from the outside. Like, this is your shame. This is your national shame. Right. And as a, you know, 22-year-old kid, I never reflected on Canada in that way. It just wasn't, right? So there's a blindness that we always have as, like, people that are inside whatever our situation is, right? And then layered with whatever, you know, you're immigrant and your parents are telling you to focus on survival and whatever. So
it's me and Ali. Well, no, it's all this stuff is very, for me, a big deal lately, because we actually talked about this on the last podcast. This notion of, you know, this fucking word reconciliation, right? And you see what's happening now, that finding these undiscovered graves, it's like, what's the moment of forgiveness, frankly, that's ever going to come for this? Like, how can we reasonably expect the victims of this situation, the generational victims of this situation, to forgive, move on, deal with it, get past it? So then I'm left as an artist thinking, here, I'm a 49-year-old white guy, I'm an immigrant from England.
I only found out you were white today when I saw you in person.
I'm trying to be a member of this community. I'm trying to be an artist that reflects the world around me. But do I have any right anymore? Or do I have any purpose anymore in speaking to this place? Because I am representative of a past that is un-get-overable, and I am representative of a future that I'm not part of. So I've been lately thinking, maybe I should go back to England, where the land, where I am of that land. Like, my people were there for 15,000 years, you know, and maybe that will somehow open up my ability as an artist to feel less useless in a strange way. I don't know, man. Does that resonate with you at all?
Well, there's an interesting question of like...
Because you said your folks moved back to Rwanda, right? Like, is there that part of you that's like, maybe I should go check that out and see what it's like and see if I feel that...
Well, I feel privileged to get to go back, you know, now that my parents... So when we came here...
And what's it like when you go back? Do you feel like, oh, I feel this in my bones?
I do, but I also am very much of this place, right? Like this is...
Of course.
I've put, you know, I've put roots down here and...
How old were you when you got here?
I was a baby.
Right. I was 8 and so, but I'm fucking Canadian. I'm way more Canadian than I am British.
Yeah. And you put down roots here, right? In your short life, in my short life, we've established this is our home, you know, this is where it is, right? Yeah. So there is an interesting question for us about, you know, what does it mean to move forward and live well on this land? Mm-hmm. You know, the experience I was talking about on the West Coast, hearing somebody talk about their relationship to land, what that made me realize was my spiritual poverty. Mm. Of not having a relationship to the soil, right?
Yes.
you know, of course, I think a lot about, especially hearing these stories, you know, these discoveries, I think about the suffering of Indigenous people, but I also think about our spiritual poverty, all of us here, for the way that our culture has taught us to think about land, taught us to think about the cultures and the languages and the people that are truly Indigenous to this land. We are, you know, I grieve all of it. Yeah. I grieve all of it. And I think about moving forward, I think about the fact that, hey, in my short life, I'm here. So I need to figure out how to live well here, right? And I think it involves,
continue, please.
Yeah, I just think it involves, I keep coming back to it, you know, trying to repair this spiritual issue.
So how does that spirituality that you're talking about so much manifest itself for you? How are you expressing? Like, have you gotten God in a way? I mean, are you finding some part of you that wasn't there before?
I've always been spiritually inclined, you know, and spiritual practice has always been a part of my life. And it's part of my music too, you know, like and music is that, like, it's one and the same. Again, like talking about humans and the environment, it's the same thing, right?
When I heard that fucking kick drum, we played a show yesterday, when the kick drum came in, it was like, it was like somebody had put a defibrillator on my chest. You know? It was just like, back
alive.
You
did that move I saw on stage, right? I saw that, it was nice.
Right? So to me, it's all one and the same, and however it expresses itself is beautiful, you know?
But are you focusing more on that in your own life, I guess?
I wouldn't say any more than I ever have before.
Right.
But it's just become
more important.
More apparent to me that it's in everything. Mm. It's in everything from like relationship to land, to music, to community and getting together, you know, like we've kind of gone on off of the pandemic, but like we got to get together.
Yeah.
We have to be in the presence of each other.
Yes.
It's not good without it. Mm. Like it's spiritual to get together. It's spiritual to be in each other's company because we're such social creatures and we're so inclined towards one another when we're together.
And it's like when you're on the internet, everyone's in a car and, you know, people behave abysmally in cars. They beep at each other
road
and
rage.
Throw each other the finger. It's the so when you're actually in the flesh with each other, it's very difficult to be uncivil, unkind, not have any sense of the other person's humanity, right? You have to be really quite nuts to not feel that person's love, you know?
Yes. And if you're a social person like me, it's very hard not to like the person in front of you.
Yeah.
It's really hard not to like the person
in front of you. But it's easy not to like the person who's writing something
like
you don't agree with
on
the internet.
It's really easy, and I feel like it gets easier and easier. And that's what scares me. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the pandemic, pandemic, especially the last 6 months, it's like my ability to trust is eroding.
Well, because people personify social media and the internet all the time. The Capitol riot was basically a Reddit forum come to life. You know, every week these anti-mask protests are literally a Facebook group come to life. We now, speaking of land, what is the land that we're on? We're literally standing on a one and zero binary social media ground. That's where we experience most of our lives. That's where we walk. So when we go into the real world, it's expected of us to kind of do that. So now that we go back into the real world, what are we going to do? So going back into the real world, as artists, we have been amazing. There, we have been empathetic. We said we're not going to open up. Like, this theater that we're in right now, I mean, hasn't had a show since what, March, Chris? Like March. We have never once said, you know what, F it, we're doing it. Mm-hmm. We've never done that. But now we're getting to the point where there's going to be a large majority swath, particularly in this country, 80% double dose. And we are probably still going to be asked, maybe, to still be who we were. Do you think now is the time for artists to say, okay, especially in the live entertainment space, we've done enough.
Yeah.
We must do this now, that it is as important as indoor dining. Yeah. It must be done. Yeah. And do you think that we have the chutzpah to do that? And should we?
Okay, from a practical standpoint, we kind of need to.
Because otherwise the industry is over.
We gotta work. Yeah, like people gotta work, right? So from a practical standpoint, it needs to happen. And from a, like I was saying, just from a, we need to get together. There's no way to quantify it. I just sort of feel it in me, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the social trust, my ability to trust is like, it's eroding. Right. And I just feel like people are a little meaner, people a little colder, people more distant. And like, we need, for all this stuff we've been talking about to happen, like this big pivot we all need to do, we have to be able to get together. It can't happen
Agreed. Online.
We got to be able to get together. We got to be able to have fun together.
That's why the George Floyd protests worked, right? Was because it was on the street. It wasn't online. It was people putting their bodies on the line.
Yeah, it wasn't just a bunch of like social media posts being shared.
It was
constantly.
Real.
People went to the streets.
It was real unity.
Yeah.
It was real. We, you know, and...
How do you feel though? You're about to play a show. Where are you playing a show?
Calgary.
So how do you feel about it? Because I just played Calgary. Nobody's wearing masks.
Yep.
Everybody's standing there looking at you.
Yeah.
Do you have, what's your fear level?
Like,
what's your anxiety level?
My thing
level?
Is like, I'm no statistician, but I feel like this isn't complicated numbers to run to me. Like, it's not. Like, a certain amount of people are double vaxxed. Certain amount of people have one vaccination. Certain amount of people have chosen not to get a vaccination and they won't get a vaccination. So, based on that, how many people are going to die from this? How many, and what would it take for the hospitals to get full such that people die from not getting the care they need? To me, it's not, I don't think that's complicated to figure out. Those are the risks, right? The risks are deaths from just the illness and deaths from not getting the treatment that you need. So given how many people have double vaxxed and how many people have one vaccination, and we know that if you have one vaccination, you're better off, right? In terms of if you get it. So, I'm no statistician. My guess at the numbers is we're all right.
Yeah.
Is we're pretty safe. But I'm not a guy that can
and
run the numbers.
And how do you think we, as a, I guess, like to Ali's point, you know, Chris is going to have to convince his audience here at Crows that it's safe to come back in here, that they want to come back in here. Theaters, especially who run slightly older in their audience, opera, ballet, theater, dance, that kind of stuff. If you were like running one of these places and you had to come up with the pitch to say to your audience, come back, how would
to
you
do that? To a concerned patron.
Yeah, like how would you do that?
I'm a concerned patron wanting to go to a Shad concert. What do you say to me?
I would say that I totally understand your concerns and you're right, there are risks. Mm-hmm. I would say that the way I think about it, the risks look like this, you know, based on the numbers and so on. The risks look like this for me. The risks look like this for other people. Mm-hmm. So I feel comfortable doing X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. you know, like my little brother lives with us, and he was nervous about getting the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so that was exactly the conversation I had with him. Like, I know there's risk to getting a vaccine. Totally fair.
Yep.
This is why I'm getting it. This is how I understand it. And this is how I'm getting it, why I'm getting it. And he was like, okay, cool. And he was on board. Mm. But again, we're also social creatures. So I feel like the more people that do it, the more other people will do it. Like, I think part of what convinced him was like, I went and my sister went. And her husband went, and my wife went. It's like, okay.
How would you feel about playing a show that demanded people be vaccinated? What's your position on that? We were talking about this last night in the dressing room. It's a tough one, man. It's a tough one because apparently people are hearing from audience members, I won't go to a show where people aren't vaccinated. So if you want me to come back, you got to show me that everyone's vaccinated. They're hearing that from a lot of people. So what's your vibe on that?
Are they concerned about the risk to themselves or to other people?
I have
people?
To imagine that they are concerned about the risk to themselves. That this is,
I have a different
this
theory.
Is the thing, that that's it's kind one. Of performative. It's kind of like, soothe my ambient anxiety by making sure that something I'm already at almost zero risk for is now zero risk.
It's also, I want a reward. Yeah. I want the shot.
Yes, right.
Reward me with the privilege of doing things.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we need to step back and be like, I'm so thankful you got. I'm cognizant that 20% of people are not going to get the shot. But frankly, if we get to 80%, I don't care.
But would you be uncomfortable with that? Like, if somebody asked you to go on tour and be like, hey, dude, we're going to, you know, like Live Nation, for example, has said that they're going to make everybody show vaccination status. I don't see how they do it, but how would you feel about that?
I don't really see how that's possible. You know, like there's just some people that aren't going to get it. They've chosen not to get it. They've chosen to accept the risks. And we live in a society where we don't make people do things. So it's like, okay, they've chosen that and that's what it is. But like, you can't, I don't know, to me, you can't shut down an event or whatever. Like they've chosen that risk. And hopefully, because most of us have chosen to get vaccinated, they're safer. Right? Like if they land in the hospital, it won't be
as bad because they didn't get as much viral load, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And the ventilators won't be all that's booked true. Up. Right. So hopefully we've made it as safe as possible for those people. And that's kind of like how I feel. Like, from the outset, I was like, there is a point where we will have to decide, to go on living.
Soft Revolution is brought to you by investwithtim.ca. Tim Ziegler is a financial security advisor who works with self-employed people and retirees on their finances. Investment shops love their oil investments. Talk to Tim about moving your RRSPs out of all that stuff and into a greener, more responsible portfolio. Or if you're just starting out, maybe just a quick chat about being smarter with your money. Find out more at investwithtim.ca. And I'm going to make a special note about Tim Ziegler. Tim Ziegler is an artist. I met Tim Ziegler when we were both apprenticing at the Shaw Festival. And if you want somebody who not only is good with the books, but good in the heart, this is a man that you should definitely, definitely get in touch with. Thank you, Tim, for supporting Soft Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
Like, whenever that is, like there will be a point.
And it's coming fairly soon.
And
it's,
you know, and yeah, from the beginning, I was kind of like, I feel like a year and a half, 2 years is too long to put life on pause.
Yeah.
You know, people don't live that long.
We're going to let you go because I know you got kitties and lives and records.
I could talk forever.
I know, you're the best. But you are a pandemic dad. You had a kid pretty much at the beginning of the pandemic, which is, I'm jealous. That's a sweet way to spend the pandemic.
It was dope.
Like, I have a 12-year-old. You know what I'm going to ask you. When you think about your beautiful kids, you look at them and your fucking heart is like filled with this in loveness that is absolutely impossible to put a limit on. Are you scared? Does it freak? Are you scared? What do you want for your kids? What do you hope for your kids?
What I hope for my kids is that they will, as they already do, bring goodness into the world. That's what I hope for them.
And are you,
as they already do, they already light up my life and my wife's life, and you know, like just in whatever way, you know,
it's risky to be alive, right? They're gonna live a life.
I hope they make this better. I hope they make this world better. You know, like I think all of us at this table have had the tremendous joy and contentment and satisfaction that comes from feeling like you've enriched someone's life. And that's what I want them to get to experience, you know? And there will be no shortage of problems for them to, you know, have a hand in fixing. Just pick one, pick anyone.
And do something
and continue to bring goodness into the world. And I hope that they feel just deeply secure and rooted as they do it, and that they're well. That's what I hope.
Shad on the Soft Revolution podcast. Unbelievable dude. Love that guy. You know when you meet people that you don't hang out with very much and you just fucking love them, mm-hmm. and you feel like kind of like stalkerish, like you're just like, can I just be your friend? Can I hang out with you every day? That's how I feel about Shad.
He had to airdrop the file, and I don't know. Am I going to keep that number? Sorry, Shad. I am.
Just call him late at night. Hey, Shad, it's Shad. Allie. Remember me?
Remember when you airdropped me that file?
Can you just drop some knowledge on me right now? Because I really need your shit. Just an amazing thinker. I really love... You know, it takes a lot of courage to talk about spiritual revolution because it sounds airy-fairy or it sounds vague, right? But I really do think he's onto something there in terms of like... If we don't actually detach our humanity from these machines, from our binary life, we are not going to get there. We have to find a way in our behavior as individuals to separate the internet, to separate their technology and the world that exists on there from our private, personal, emotional space.
Yeah, you could tell it's like, even if you feel weird, even if you're like, when you're talking to people, it feels like, oh God, are they going to get it? I think Shad's point is that it doesn't matter. At this point right now, it's like the stakes are so high that that is the only way that we have to change our value system.
Yeah.
And it's now or never.
And you can't be perfect. Like, I give in to anger. I give in to frustration. I give in to fear. But I am trying very hard to focus on the beautiful things about this world, the beautiful things about people. I do think it's important. I really, really do. And as Shad pointed out, the best way to do that is to get together in a room and celebrate our common stories, listen to some music, hear somebody tell us a story, watch a movie, whatever it is, and be like, oh yeah, we are actually all together in this. We're not just a group of demographics battling for space in a digital world. Anyway, millions of thanks to Shad. We got him to promise he'll be back. So he's a friend of the pod now, and we're gonna be hassling him for his hot takes for many years to come, hopefully. Okay, let's do our art picks, Allie.
Yeah, Charlotte Day Wilson.
Oh, love the Charlotte Day
Charlotte
Wilson.
Charlotte Day Wilson has a new album out. Yes. I actually did wanna ask Shad about why is it that Canada is churning out, I would say, the best R&B music in the world.
Yes,
her, Emmanuel, like, it's just constant. I don't know what is up in the water in Canada, but it's...
Well, you know.
And I think there's probably a big answer there.
Yeah,
there's a big answer dealing with immigration and who we are.
Lots to do with immigration.
But album, you know, she is a queer female R&B artist out of Montreal.
Truly incredible.
Please, Charlotte Day Wilson.
One of the fun things with Charlotte Day Wilson is like, try not to see a photo of her, then listen to her music, then go find a photo of her, and you'll be like, what? Because she sounds...
like Sade or something.
She sounds like a million-year-old soul.
Yeah.
Like, it is a deep, dark, rounded, rich, experienced...
Yeah.
Sound, and it's coming out of this young person. She's maybe 28 or something, like just crazy talented and gifted. So that's a great art pick. What's my art pick? I'm gonna do a vague one, which is this. I played in front of people this week. By the end of the show, there was lots of room in the field, but by the end of the show, there was a little clump of people down front who just by sort of osmosis were brought together. They wanted to be close together. So here's my art pick for you, or what I kind of recommend for you. If you're double vaxxed and you're feeling good, go out. Go see a show, go see a movie, go be with a group of people. You're safe as you ever were, and it really doesn't matter what it is. Go hang out in the park and do a fucking hippie drum circle, whatever you need to do. Take that first step into the water. It feels a little weird. There's some ambient anxiety there, but that's normal. It's okay to feel that. You're safe. We're safe with each other if we're vaccinated. That's the whole point of these vaccines. So my art pick is just a gathering. Just go to a gathering and be in it and enjoy yourself and try not to worry, darlings, because life is to be lived. Life is to be lived.
Yeah.
And art is the story of living life. Art is the way we live our life. Art is what makes us not just existing. It makes us more than
people. So what you're actually picking is Rihanna's Live Your Life.
I guess I am.
That's what you're picking.
I guess I am. Yeah. And thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, I just
that.
Want to be detailed.
All my art picks ultimately are just Rihanna's Live Your Life. Or Troopers, We're Here for a Good Time, Not for a Long Time. Also, I think that's my art pick. Troopers, We're Here for a Good Time, Not for a Long Time. So have a good time. The sun don't shine every day. That's Soft Revolution for another week. We will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Shad. We love you. Love you, homie.
Love you, homie.
Bye.
Bye.
The wind embraces you in ways I wish I could. Around the bend and up your firewood. Oh, the time comes, the time it always comes too soon. I wish that I could slow it down with you. I wish that I could focus the end. Trying to navigate your skin and bones.